compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good morning and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149. That's the on-air number. If you call that number, we can get you on the air with your question or comment. 888-914-9149. Now, Pledge Drive is over. You remember last week we were doing Pledge Drive wall-to-wall. And wow, what a great Pledge Drive. It's hard to even begin to thank you because we had a need of $2.7 million and we exceeded that by far. And a little bit later in the program, I should have an updated number so I can share with you what it came out to. But it far exceeded that. And so we're grateful to God and deeply grateful to you for your generosity. Now, if you weren't able to participate, I understand things get busy. But you can still go to relevantradio.com or use the Relevant Radio app and make a pledge if you want to be counted for this pledge drive. If for whatever reason you couldn't make it, feel free to do it for the next day or so. We'll hold the door open for you. And again, thank you so much. I'll have a number for you a little bit later in the program today as to what we actually arrived at as of this morning. 888-914-9149 is the number. Cyrus, do you remember maybe 2 years ago it was, I think? I remember Kaylin was still with us at that time, and we did a show sort of around the general theme of, you know, if you could make a phone call to your 21-year-old self or your 20-year-old self, what advice would you give?
Yes, it was an astronaut.
Right.
Yes, that was
a Canadian astronaut, right?
That was good audio. Yeah, I forgot about it until you just mentioned it.
It was a neat hour or so. I think we extended it maybe for 2 hours. We had lots of great audience participation. And we were just considering this from different angles. I have something I want to share this morning that's kind of like that, and it might even lead back into that topic. Wisdom of Heroes, 13 World War II veterans give advice to young Americans. And just as I was reading this article, I was reflecting on just how different, how radically different the United States of America is today compared to how it was in, let's say, 1941 when World War II started, for America anyway. And I don't mean just technologically. I mean, of course, in 1941, there was, you know, virtually nothing that we take for granted today. I mean, even air conditioning. The vast majority of homes had no air conditioning at all. Maybe some fans, but there was no internet. There were no devices that we have now. I remember when the Walkman came out in the early 1980s, and that was a massive technological breakthrough. And it was a cassette tape. And by today's standards, that's horse and buggy stuff. So not just technologically, but I would say morally and socially and in the way that we look at the world, generally speaking, the U.S. is so radically different than it was then. So that's what I found. The premise for me, Cyrus, was so amazing. Like, you know, somebody who was fighting in World War II all those years ago, you know, what advice would they give to somebody today, spanning both generations? So I want to get into that, Cyrus, and you know, maybe that will be a good springboard to talk about once again. I haven't gone back and listened to that show that we did a couple of years ago about what advice would you give to your 21-year-old self, and I'm certain that whatever I said I would give myself advice in is the same thing I would say now, but maybe a few other things like don't get on TikTok, or don't get a smartphone too early. Yeah. What about you? What are your thoughts on
invest in
advice?
Bitcoin and Amazon
and Facebook.
Right.
Yeah, the things that people hate in some cases could have made them a lot of money. Yeah, just even just Amazon or Google. Could you imagine if you had been able to get some Google stock or Apple?
I saw Bitcoin. I was early Bitcoin, and I was just like, there's no way this is just a fraud. The feds will shut this down as soon as it gets big.
Magic money.
I could have been a multi-millionaire already.
You could have.
Way to go, well, Cyrus.
Keep working hard in Catholic radio.
Hey.
You'll never get there. You'll never be a millionaire. That's the truth.
Yeah, but I'll actually live a nice, happy life, which is
good.
That's
right. And, you know, when it comes time for your exit interview, you'll have lots of nice things on that checklist that the Lord will talk to you about. Oh, and look, you helped all these people. Oh, and look. So, yeah, it's a good trade-off, I'd say.
Yeah.
So your sole advice to yourself would be to invest more wisely?
I don't know. I wish I would have had a little more time. I didn't know you were going down this route at all. And I'm trying to think of what I said last time. But I guess my go-to advice is forgive other people and forgive yourself.
That's a good one.
That's it. I mean, don't carry that luggage of hatred around with you. Drop it. Let it go.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I was going to say invest in real estate in Southern California, but your thing is okay too. You know, forgiveness and
all that and all nonsense. That yeah.
No, I know what you mean. Well, let me share this with you. This is from the New York Post, and I'll just share it more or less verbatim because it's a beautifully put together piece. Heather Robinson wrote it. As Americans emerge from upheaval amid the global pandemic in a deep political divide, the wisdom of these veterans is more needed than ever. This Veterans Day in 2021, these elder warriors can still speak to us and we still have a chance to listen. Now, there are not many of them left now. So I'm just going to go through. There's 13 of them. It's relatively brief. Charles Shea, he was an Army medic. He's 97 years old. He served in Normandy, France. When Shea, a Penobscot Native American, was drafted at 19, he had scarcely left the Indian Island in Maine. I'm sorry, it's Indian Island, not the Indian Island. He says, I never knew at that time what I was destined to experience. He recalls his mother traveling to New York to wave to him as his ship, the RMS Queen Elizabeth, set sail for England. He said, my father had to work, so he stayed in Maine, but he was there in spirit. He was a medic. He landed with the first wave at Omaha Beach on D-Day, the largest seaborne invasion in history, credited with hastening Nazi Germany's defeat. Coming ashore from the landing boats, weighed down by machine guns and ammunition, many men drowned. Others made it to the beach and were killed in a hail of gunfire. He was in water up to his chest, using obstacles the Germans had placed as protection from gunfire. He scrambled up the beach with his medic's bag and began treating the injured. He said, I found myself a place to work on higher ground. I saw that the wounded men that were piling up on the shore were there as the tide was rising. So he said, I realized that they would drown. Running back to shore, he turned them on their backs and dragged them up to higher ground. Bullets whizzed past. He was untouched. He still wonders why. Among the wounded was a friend and a fellow medic, Edward Moroskovich, whose injuries were past help. He said, we said goodbye. For his bravery that day, he received the Silver Star and the Bronze Star. He pursued a career as an Air Force medic, and in 2009, he successfully lobbied the state of Maine to establish a Native American Veterans Day. That's cool. Affinity for the French and deep connection to Normandy, where in 2007 he received the Legion of Honor, and where he still conducts ceremonies to honor the dead, prompted him to retire there. His advice is, now this is for us today, and in particular for young people, his advice is, it was our country originally, and even though he's referring to the Native Americans, it was our country originally, and even though Native Americans didn't have as many rights as other citizens, we were still fighting for our country. For younger people considering military service, it's not a bad life. I wish you good luck. So that's his advice. Alexander Jefferson, he was an Army fighter pilot. He's 100 years old. And he, actually, I take that back. He will be 100 years old in 7 days. He's from Detroit, Michigan. He was shot down over Nazi-occupied southern France in August of 1944. He had never parachuted before. He had flown 18 combat missions with the 332nd Fighter Group, part of the famed African-American pilots and support personnel who became known as the Tuskegee Airmen. Jefferson remembered to let the plane pass him before pulling the ripcord. Otherwise, the parachute can get tied up in the plane and you'll get dragged to your death. Bruised and scraped, but with nothing broken, he landed in a tree. Hearing German and himself being black and knowing that the Nazis were very racist, he said, oh, brother, here we go. He was held captive with fellow American pilots in desegregated quarters in the German prisoner of war camp. He remembers decent food from the Red Cross and adequate medical care. He and his fellow pilots visited Dachau immediately after the liberation. He remembers piles of bodies, man's inhumanity to man. He says, I can't even describe it. Everything you hear about Dachau and Auschwitz is true. He became a grade school science teacher and then an assistant principal, and he also wrote a book called Red Tail Captured, Red Tail Free. And his advice is, no place is going to be perfect, so love your country and preserve democratic life here. Keep your nose to the grinding to the grinding mill, get an education, and vote. That's all good. Nell Bright, pilot, 100 years old, Salt Lake City, Utah. Born and raised near Amarillo, Texas, Bright flew in an open cockpit World War I airplane with her dad when she was 8. She vowed to one day be a pilot. At 19, she read about Jacqueline Cochran, a famous aviatrix who ran and helped establish the Women's Air Force Pilots, the WASP program. And she applied. She was accepted. The pilots were mostly in their late teens and early 20s. They were female volunteers who took military flying jobs in the United States to free men up for overseas combat during World War II. A pilot's license was required. Of the 25,000 women applicants, 1,879 were accepted, 1,074 of whom got their wings. She flew strafing missions in the desert. She flew twin-engine beach airplanes, training male pilots to use searchlights. She towed targets behind B-25 and B-26 bombers to help men practice shooting using live ammunition, one of the most dangerous exercises. She said, "We couldn't believe we were getting paid to fly the airplanes we wanted to fly. Many of us during the Depression did without lunch to pay for flying lessons. We wanted to help our country." Her older brother, an Army pilot, had been stationed in Italy and got discharged, so she got permission to fly home to see him in Amarillo. He said, "Oh no, I'll take the bus." She recalls, "Little sister couldn't do anything," he said. So her advice, simple, use your common sense.
And she flew him home anyway.
She flew him home
anyway.
He
did not take the bus.
No. That's a long drive.
These are cool. Chuck, I'm going through these stories. I just posted Twitter if people want to follow along here. Mm-hmm. But it's got all these photographs of, you know, now and then. And wow, these people lived incredible lives.
It's so true. Even just, you know, just the chance or the, you know, the happenstance of being born at that time, not knowing that World War II is about to happen, and then to have a role in it, and then to be alive today, to be still alive all these years later, to be able to impart advice from across those generations. I want to keep going through this, and we will keep going through this as time permits. I also want to take your phone calls. Let's go to Austin in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Austin.
Hi, Patrick. How's it going?
I am doing well, thank you.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question about Blessed and Catherine Embrich's books. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure, kind of, I just kind of want to get your take on her writings, especially some of the more controversial takes that she has, which she kind of describes the Old Testament, and she goes through like the curse of Ham, and see that, you know, like Africa was cursed, and you know, some more, like some of her some people portray her writings as being anti-Semitic too, and just, you know, what we are to make of it, because she was a very holy woman and, you know, had these visions, and they seem to have, you know, bear fruit, and she seems to be on her way to sainthood. So I'm just wondering what you know, your take on that is, and how we are to read that in today's, you know, world.
Yeah, with the supercharged tensions that people experience now. Well, I haven't read those writings of hers, so I don't really know what to say about them. I wasn't aware that she was saying things that could be characterized that way, and it may well be the case. I just haven't read them. I have read more of what I have read of her writings is more to do with like the Passion of Jesus. So some of the details that she claims that she saw about the Via Dolorosa, the Last Supper, the crucifixion, I find that very interesting. And it's purely private revelation, so the church does not say that it is, you know, certain that these things are true. But her writings, there was a cloud over her writings because of the way they were written down, and I think even translated. Clemens Brentano, I think, was the name of her sort of redactor, scribe. And once they were properly translated, I think a lot of those question marks disappeared. But you would read it, if you're asking me, you know, what do you make of it? I would just say, just make of it what you will. If it's indeed authentic private revelation, then it's interesting, but it's not binding. So you can read it, at, you know, if you wish. She herself, as you say, seems to have been a very holy woman. Now, I can give you a little tidbit here that may help answer your question about, you know, the curse of Ham, etc. If you look at, not necessarily just the curse of Ham, but just you mentioned some of the anti-Semitic stuff. If you look at the writings of some of the major church fathers, including and maybe most particularly St. John Chrysostom, they, by today's standards, are very anti-Semitic. You know, he was very, very, very critical and hostile even to the Jews. And yet he's a father of the church. So even though Anne Catherine Emmerich is not a father or doctor of the church, even if she was a very holy person, as I have no doubt he was, even the holiest of people, with a few exceptions, of course, like Jesus and Mary and St. John the Baptist, but largely speaking, even very holy people can be wrong on certain things. And we can look back later and say, boy, that was a real mistake, or that was a real flaw. But it doesn't mean that they can't nonetheless be holy and even go to heaven. So I would say I would look at her in the same way that you would look at a church father like St. John Chrysostom, and you could say, well, it's regrettable, to say the least, that he employed that kind of language. It's unfortunate, to say the least. But as the Bible says, you know, test all things and hold fast to that which is good. So we don't reject him just because he had some ideas and attitudes that by today's standards would not pass muster. That's how I look at it.
Gotcha. Is there any, like, any defense of what he said? Like, was there, like, you know, was there possibly wrong, like, interpretations, or was he, like, speaking because, you know, of a persecuted Christian minority at the time, or was he just plain wrong?
Well, I mean, I don't think I could say just plain wrong. I mean, I think his attitudes were shaped by the mores and standards of the day. Not that he was a slave to the, you know, to convention. I don't mean that, but you know, he was alive in the early Middle Ages, and so his received understanding of Judaism was imbued with the hardships and the persecutions that the Jews very violently carried out against Christians. And of course the pendulum swung in the other direction. The more Christianity became ascendant in European culture and elsewhere, the more the Jews of those days paid the price for things that they had nothing to do with. It happened before them. So it's not as though it was just always Jewish predations against Christians, but certainly in the first few centuries that was true. And then I think a lot of what he wrote was probably conditioned through having heard and seen and read about all of those things. So he did not have a positive view of Jews in general. So as far as the defense of it, I mean, I wouldn't make a defense of it personally. I don't think it's something we should defend. I think we should acknowledge it and understand it as best we can in context. But you know, by today's standards, you know, we look at the world differently, and certainly the church has improved greatly in recent years, at least, in terms of going out of our way to show more respect, you know, and less antagonism, hopefully no antagonism, for the Jews. Anyway, those are my thoughts. It's an interesting question, and if you ever get a chance to read St. John Chrysostom, it's beautiful, powerful, theologically precise material, but here and there you're going to run into some of his comments about the Jews. I appreciate the call, Austin. I have to take a break. The number is 888-914-9149. When we return, more of your phone calls, and I'm going to continue sharing with you this really cool article about 13 different World War II veterans and the advice that they're giving to young people today. You don't want to miss that. I'll be right back. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with hundreds of other listeners who have donated their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
They say it's your birthday.
I knew you were going to do it.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Can't believe it got here so quickly.
Comes every year.
Seems like we just did this a couple months ago.
No, doesn't
here
it?
Here we are doing it again.
Yep. So you're getting all Beatles all day.
Love it.
Happy birthday.
Love it. Thank you. Thank you. So you're going to ask me, how does it feel to be 35?
I'm not going to ask you that. I thought you were 35 last year.
I felt like I felt like 21 last year. I feel like 21 this year.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, I want to share a story before we proceed. And thank you, Cyrus. So what is today? Monday. So this would have been Thursday. And we get a lot of stuff from Amazon. We get a lot of stuff that you would normally like maybe get at the grocery store with the free shipping. And there's a massive Amazon warehouse really close to where we live. You know, it's less than 10 miles away. So we're not quite at the same day delivery, but it's so convenient and there's no shipping. So like we get a lot of stuff. So lo and behold, I go out to the, you know, the front porch, and there is this box from Amazon for me. And I open it up, and it is the new Paul McCartney. It's just a lavishly illustrated, incredible photographs. It's a two-volume hardcover, very heavy volumes in a very nice slip case of all the lyrics. It's called The Lyrics, and it's all the lyrics for all the songs that he wrote, including with Wings and even after that. So he gives the details about the song itself, you know, where was it recorded, when did this happen. In a lot of cases, there are pictures of the handwritten lyrics that he would write on a napkin or the back of an envelope or things like that. And then he also has a written explanation of what was going on in his mind when he wrote the song. What was going on with the Beatles, for example. It's just a lot of information there. And it's all told by him. So it's sort of like his memoir that's built around his lyrics for the songs. So I just like, oh, yeah, that's right. You know, I remember thinking to myself a few days earlier, I really want to get this. I'm going to get this. And so I got it unwrapped and I thought, this is great. But when did I buy this? I thought I must have bought it like a couple nights earlier. You know, maybe just before I went to bed. So it was late enough that I was tired. And I thought, well, okay, this is great. I got it. So
then you remember this. You brag about it. He starts sending, I have a string of texts here of pictures of this thing. And he said, arrived today. Happy birthday to me. Smiley face.
Right.
And so I said, happy birthday, old chap. I thought that was his way of saying thank you. I'm the one who got him the book. So
yeah, I sent you pictures of the book, so, and I was bragging, and I said, arrived today, happy birthday to me. But I thought I had ordered it for myself.
It's so funny. It's a happy birthday to me, smiley face. I'm like, all right, hey, happy birthday, old chap. I thought that was his way of saying thank you. I'm cool with it. I'm just glad he's happy.
Yeah. But there was no thank you. Yeah, there was no.
Yeah. And so I say happy birthday. And he's like, thanks, but my birthday's not till Monday. But this is an early celebration. And so still I'm thinking he just thanked me for the birthday.
Because
I put a little note in there, like I put a little happy birthday note. And so I wrote back, hey, I just knew I had to buy this for you before you bought it for yourself. And then his next text is, wait, what? You sent this?
I was so befuddled up
it
to
was
that
so
point.
It was so funny. I was crying. I was laughing so hard.
Yeah.
It was so funny.
Well, okay, officially, thank you. This is my official on-air thank you, Cyrus. It is a brilliant gift. Thank you very much. I'll be using it for the rest of my life, no doubt.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. But I truly did not realize you would send it to me. And Nancy had thrown the box out, and there was no way for me to find it.
Oh, throw Nancy under the bus.
Uh-huh. No. Uh-huh. All right, I threw the box out.
There we go. The truth comes out.
That's better. But I really did not know. So what was funny to me, was that you didn't ask me like, so how do you like it? You know, you just sort of took it in stride. And that must have come across as rude to you, that I was being rude to you by not saying
all.
Thank you.
Not at all. I thought that was your thank you and you were super happy about it. I was like, all right, Patrick's happy. Of course he's happy. He's going to love this thing. This is a no-brainer gift.
I was bragging about it on Twitter because I took those pictures and I posted them on Twitter before I realized that this was a gift from you. So then I followed it up by saying, oh, there's a hilarious backstory that Cyrus is actually the one who gave this to me.
It really is funny.
Yeah. So, it made it even better, you know, to have that little goofy story to go with.
Yeah, that's great. That's fine. Well, you know, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
All right. What is that? Is that a
you
Smurf?
Ask me that every year. You hate it. So Pat, I have learned from years of working with Patrick, he doesn't like the cartoon sound effects. So I've got a whole bunch of them here that I'm waiting to use.
Just for my birthday. Well, again, thank you. That was cool. And if you want to see the book, well, it's actually two books. You want to see it, you'll find it on my Twitter feed. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Steve in Fresno. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, you know, ever since I've converted almost 10 years ago, I've been confessing the same sin every month, sometimes twice a month. Now, I'll keep the show family friendly, but it rhymes with concentration. And for heaven's sakes, I can't stop concentrating, no matter how firm my resolve is. What do you do when you're presented with this, you know, scenario? I finally had a priest kind of get irritated or, you know, last night. He's like, you were just here 2 weeks ago. What is your, you know, and I don't know. What are your thoughts?
All right. Well, if you're looking at pornography, stop cold turkey. Just completely eradicate that from your life if that's the cause of this. If something else is the cause of it, eradicate it entirely, nuke it out of existence. Jesus said that it's better for you to pluck out your eye or cut off your hand or your foot and enter heaven that way than to be cast into the fire of hell with your eye or your hand or your foot intact. Now, he didn't mean that literally, but it certainly applies not only with this sin, but any other sin that might be habitual. You have to go nuclear. You have to eradicate it. You have to make changes in your life, whatever that may be. So if being alone is the scenario where this sin starts, don't be alone. Be with other people. If you're married, you know, make sure that you're not assuming that pornography is the source of this, but it usually is, you know, don't be alone in your office at night with the door closed. You know, make sure your wife has the password to your phone and any apps you might have. If you have apps that lead to this, then get rid of them. So that'd be my first advice. You just have to eliminate the things that are occasions of sin. And once you know what those occasions of sin are, then you nuke them mercilessly. And if you don't do that, you're never really going to get over this. You're never going to get past it. The second thing is, I would, if you're not already doing so, Steve, I would pick up the rosary and use it as a weapon against this vice and pray the rosary every day. Don't go to bed at night without having prayed the rosary. And one thing you'll find is that knowing that you have to pray the rosary is very likely going to dampen your interest in the other thing, because you realize it's going to be weird to be praying the rosary because you made a commitment to praying the rosary. You're going to be praying the rosary, and it's going to be weird for you because you're going to be, you know, this is going to be a collision between good and evil, between holy and unholy. You can do this, but you have to do it. You have to be rigorous with yourself, and you can conquer this. Ask Our Lady to help you. Read a book called The Courage to be Chaste by Father Benedict Groeschel. Now, it's not just about this topic, but he talks about this topic in that book, The Courage to be Chaste. And then I would get in touch with Matt Frad's materials. Matt, his last name is Frad, F-R-A-D-D, and he's got a number of books on the issue of pornography and the ensuing sins that generally are associated with that. And he himself, I mean, I'm not saying anything out of school, but he himself was once where you are now. And he was able to get free of it, and he explains how he did it. So that would be another resource. The same with Steve Wood's materials. His website is dads.org, and he has quite a bit of material there to help men get free of this problem. So those are my bits of advice. Continue to go to the Sacrament of Confession, though. Don't neglect to go to confession, because there you receive graces. But without being radical, without nuking this problem and the things associated with it that I just mentioned, you're probably never going to get free of it. So if that's the thing you haven't been doing, then I would do that. And I'll say a little prayer that this works for you, Steve. Thank you. Let's go to Jessica now in Albuquerque. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
So my question is about my son, who he and his wife are both members of the Navy, and they had a very small Catholic wedding back in May. She is not Catholic. He is. And I wasn't able to attend because I'm dealing with some health issues, but just her parents and my husband attended. So now they want to do something locally with, you know, extended family and such. And she's talking about a renewal of vows of sorts. I kind of encourage more of just a reception. But if they were to do some sort of ceremony, what would be appropriate or not for a Catholic?
When you say ceremony, do you mean as far as the wedding is concerned?
Kind of like a renewal of vows at this point, because they are married.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I mean, there is a rite for that in the Catholic Church, a ritual for that. And so there is an established way to do it that could be done at a Catholic church by a deacon or a priest. And it's not terribly elaborate, okay, but it is something that the church has already sort of sketched out. So that might be the easiest way to do it.
And so it would be kind of similar to, I mean, I understand it's not the same as the sacrament of marriage, but it would be like a similar ceremony within the church. And
It's not a sacrament, but it's a sacramental. And it is the couple's reaffirmation of their wedding vows. Wedding vows don't need to be renewed, strictly speaking, because it's not like they expire. They're permanent until death. And this is why the sacrament of holy matrimony is repeatable, because it's not a permanent sacrament when one part of the other dies. But before that point, the marriage vows are they're durable. They're ironclad, you might say. So it's a nice thing to do, but it doesn't change the marriage. It doesn't do anything to the marriage per se. It's just a beautiful expression of the two people publicly recommitting themselves to each other, or restating their commitment to each other. Nancy and I Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Would it be inappropriate then if they were to have something, you know, a public restatement of vows in more of a secular way without a priest?
There's nothing wrong with it. I would say it's more appropriate to do it in a church before a priest or a deacon, but that's not forbidden if they wanted to do it at a park, or, you know, maybe they're having their anniversary reception dinner and they want to do something like that publicly at the dinner. They can do that. Yeah, the church says that's fine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You got it. Good to talk to you. I was just going to say that Nancy and I renewed our marriage vows on our 25th anniversary, and we're just coming up on our 41st anniversary, but the 25th anniversary was really great because we had, you know, our children, and I think at that time we had a few grandchildren by then, so it was a wonderful experience to do that, and I would recommend it to any married couple, you know, if you want to reinvigorate your sense of commitment to each other. Doing that is one way to do it. Let's go now to Marge in Grand Rapids. Good morning, Marge.
Good morning, Patrick. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can. Welcome.
Okay. Yes, regarding the call that was previous to the last one you just did, you recommended to the gentleman to say the rosary. And I just wanted to share, it just hit me right between the eyes how much easier it has been for me to recite the rosary ever since Father Rocky started the rosary every night. Mm-hmm. And I follow on Facebook, and you don't even have to do it at 8:00. You can do it anytime after that. And for me, I wanted always to recite the rosary daily, but I really struggled with it because I just did. And it became so much less of a struggle. And something I actually look forward to now is saying the rosary that these, you know, hundreds of thousands of people across the United States, listening to stories that need prayers. It's just enlarged my heart, and I feel so much a part of that the rosary is so effective. And so in case he is not if he's never said the rosary before, I think that might be a great resource for him to tap into.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, so the Family Rosary Across America with Margaret Kleinschmidt and Father Rocky is a huge audience. And I can see why, Marge, it has that effect on you that it does. It's a very centering.
Also,
it's not centering prayer, but it... Go ahead, Marge.
Yeah. When I was growing up, we said the rosary often as a family. My dad or one of my brothers would always lead, and I would always respond, the other kids, the younger kids. Mm-hmm. So I think even that, being able to say the rosary with someone else versus just interiorly has made a huge difference, because it reminded me of my youth, and it just seemed more natural to me. And my husband doesn't say it with me, or is he might at some point. I never know when that will hit him. But for now, at least I have it. I have an ability to say it. I don't know, just in a different way that makes it feel like you're doing it with someone else.
Right. I hear you, and I agree with you. Next time you pray the rosary, please include me in your intentions, would you?
I certainly will.
All right. Thanks, Marge. Great talking to you. More phone calls straight ahead. The number is 888-914-9149. We made our pledge drive goal in a big way. I'll have a number for you here in just a little bit. But thank you for participating in our pledge drive last week. If you haven't had a chance to do so yet, you can still do it at relevantradio.com or on the Relevant Radio app. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Help, I need somebody, help, not just anybody, help, you know I need someone.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Love this show. Love it all. Bring it on. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149. We'll get you on the air with your question or comment. Cyrus, real quick, you know that that low-budget movie that was being filmed called Rust, and Alec Baldwin accidentally shot? Yeah, you know that one.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, everybody knows this one.
It's a terrible story. And as far as I can tell, he's innocent. I mean, at least in terms of he didn't know.
Oh, it's a terrible accident. Yeah. Tragedy.
So the lady who died, Helena Hutchins, she was a cinematographer. So the bullet hit her, killed her shortly after that she died. So she didn't die immediately, but it killed her, and it badly injured another, I think, a director who was standing nearby. He survived, however. Well, the story gets worse. It's almost like this whole thing is cursed, because a lamp operator and pipe rigger named Jason Miller, they're shutting the thing down. So they're, you know, this is not going to proceed. And the Rust movie is probably never going to be made, at least not in this iteration. So he's helping to shut down the production and the set and dismantle everything. He gets bitten by a brown recluse spider, and he's got, necrosis. And he's going to lose his arm.
What?
He got bitten by this spider, and he's been hospitalized. He's endured multiple surgeries. The doctors are trying to stop the infection and trying to save his arm, but they're probably not going to be able to save it, they're saying. So he's going to lose his arm because of a spider bite. Makes you wonder, you know, if there's some, I don't know, my first thought is there's some diabolical infestation there. I don't know, but that's weird. I just thought I'd mention it to you.
Yeah, that's terrible. Poor guy.
And in a positive side of things, a missing teenager from North Carolina, this is from CNN, she was rescued by Kentucky police after she signaled for help using a hand gesture known on TikTok to represent violence at home. I didn't even know this existed. 16-year-old, she's from Asheville, North Carolina. She was reported missing by her parents on Tuesday. On Thursday, a motorist in Kentucky called 911 to report seeing, or 911 to report seeing a girl in distress in a vehicle on the interstate. The complainant was behind the wheel and noticed a female passenger in the vehicle making hand gestures that are known on the social media platform TikTok to represent violence at home. I need help, domestic violence. The hand gesture is one-handed sign someone can use when in distress, according to a women's foundation that's quoted here. Someone using the signal holds their hand up with the palm facing out, then tucks their thumb into their hand, and then closes their fingers to trap the thumb. And I'm doing it with my hand right now. Okay, so it's almost like your hand is swallowing your thumb. If you bring your fingers down, it looks like your hand is swallowing your thumb. Police told CNN that the teen had learned the hand gesture on TikTok. The person who called 911, I keep saying 911, stayed behind the vehicle for 7 miles, relaying information to the police. They were finally able to pull the car over and rescue the teen. The suspect originally took the teen from North Carolina to Ohio, where he has relatives. They left Ohio once his relatives found out the teen was a minor and was reported missing.
Whoa.
Yeah. So she had the presence of mind to make this gesture out the window. And I mean, we've said a lot of negative things about TikTok, but this is the first positive thing I've seen about it. So,
and kudos to the driver for sticking with that car.
I would not have known what she was.
Me neither. I thought she had been waving to me or something. I wouldn't have known.
But then you'd say, wait a minute, you're a middle-aged man. You're invisible.
It's just a kid, you know, being,
yeah,
you know, I wouldn't have thought twice about it. I wouldn't have known. Mm-hmm. I'd have been completely oblivious.
Now I do know.
Now I know
what that hand signal looks like, so I'll be on the lookout for it. It's just interesting and weird. But I guess that's one good thing we can say about TikTok. Doesn't outweigh the bad stuff, but
no. Anyway, that's good to know.
That had a happy ending at least. Let's go to Blanca in Chicago. Good morning, Blanca.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Patrick. I was calling because for a while now, I've been curious about quantum therapy and if it's related to Reiki, because I do understand that Reiki is not in alignment with the Catholic teaching. And I did have like two sessions of the quantum, and now I'm kind of regretting it. I was listening to Drew Mariani, a recorded show from yesterday. Yeah, I know. Drew Mariani. And the woman was saying all these things of the things that she had tried and with Reiki and all this stuff. And she was feeling like she needed like a type of healing or I don't want to call it exorcism, but of that kind, cause she wasn't feeling so good anymore. So I was just curious, like, whoa, you know, what is quantum and is it related to Reiki?
All right. I don't know about the quantum therapy, at least not by that name. I do know something about Reiki. And let me read to you from one of the sources that I refer to. This is a book called Yoga, Tai Chi, Reiki, A Guide for Christians by Max Scully. It's a very good book. And he says, Reiki is a branch of Qi Kung, which aims at healing not through personal cosmic Qi, but through Qi coming directly from the supreme divinity of Taoism. The Tao, commonly called the Source, it differs from all other forms of Qi Kung in that its healing power is obtained immediately following initiation without requiring years of disciplined practice. The Reiki initiation is a procedure performed by a qualified master, quote unquote, using sacred symbols of Buddhist origin by which the initiate receives the occult healing power of Qi. Reiki symbols. In Western Usui Reiki, the four symbols borrowed from Japanese Buddhism, which are physically implanted during the ritual of initiation. These, with their accompanying shorthand used in this book he's referring to, are power, mental and emotional, long distance, and master. And there's quite a bit more about this. So my advice would be, since I'm not familiar with the quantum therapy, so-called, I wouldn't know what to tell you about that. You should stay far away from Reiki, but they could be related, or they could even be the same thing, just using a different term. So my advice, Blanca, would be to get a hold of that book. You can get it online easily, Yoga, Tai Chi, Reiki, A Guide for Christians by Max Scully, and then read the chapter on Reiki and see if that matches up with what the quantum therapy was like.
Okay, only because there was like an image on the machine that they used that it looked like the, you know, that little logo or icon they have with the person sitting like crisscross. Mm-hmm. It had that image, but never was I told anything about like Reiki or anything like that. So I sensed they might be related, and now I'm having like second thoughts.
Yeah, I would advise you to just stay away from
it. And
then
I can't sleep at night.
Oh, I could see why. Because you're, you know, that's the devil's playground. That's the devil's playground. And if you're on the teeter-totter or the swing set, you know, you want to get away from the devil's playground. So ignore those things. Go to confession. bring that up. I went to some, you know, new age thing, and it's troubling my sleep, and I'm having problems with, you know, worry about it. Get that purged away from you, and then just stay away from it.
Okay.
You don't need it.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're
no,
welcome.
No, I don't know. I was just, I guess, being explorative. I don't know. I really don't need it.
You don't. Stay close to Jesus. You know, if you need any kind of, like, therapy, you can get therapy that doesn't resort to that kind of nonsense. If there's a medical issue, you can be treated for that. But this is just the devil's playground, and you don't want to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay, thank you. 888-914-9149. Zoila in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Welcome to the program. Well, Zoila, are you there?
Oh, yes. This is Zoila, yes.
I'm sorry, Zoila.
I need a book. I have a friend who wants to get closer to Mary. She doesn't know how. And she's asked me twice, and I don't know how to direct her. I said, this is a question for Patrick Madrid. Maybe you can give me a book or something that I can guide her to Mary. She said, I do not know her. She is Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm here, Zoila. I'm here. I can recommend a few things for you. I would recommend a book by Tim Staples. It's called Behold Your Mother, and it's a biblical explanation of Mary's role in God's plan of salvation, and it looks at what the Bible says about her sinlessness, her divine maternity, that she was the mother of God, her perpetual virginity, her bodily assumption, all of those things.
Can you speak a little louder? I'm hard of hearing.
I'm so sorry, but this is about as loud as I can speak without blowing people's eardrums out. So that book is called Behold Your Mother, and it's by Tim Staples, just like the store. I wrote a book, for what it's worth. It's called Any Friend of God's is a Friend of Mine, and that considers Mary within the broader context of the communion of saints. And what does the Bible say about praying to Mary? What does the Bible say about how can she hear all those prayers? That kind of thing. So I take those issues up in my book called Any Friend of God's is a Friend of Mine. So either of those, I think, would be helpful. And then, of course, there are many tracts that are available, articles that are available for free at the Catholic Answers website, catholic.com. So that'd be maybe the next step. Thanks, Zoila. I appreciate it. Let's go to George now in San Diego. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Patrick. So this is the situation. And yesterday, while attending Mass, 7 o'clock early in the morning, while receiving communion, I didn't know that this church was not giving communion in the tongue until I got to the priest, and he asked me to stick out my hand and receive communion in the hand. Mm-hmm. So okay, it caught me off guard. So I received it. I don't receive communion in the hand, but at this particular moment, I just for some reason just again surprised mm-hmm. me, and okay, I accepted it. I took it. And at that moment, I was upset, not raging or nothing. As I was returning back to my pew, I walked and tried to make a shortcut going back. And as I was walking, I noticed a host on the floor. And I picked it up, and I took it back to my seat, and I obviously cupped it and tried to protect it. And I gave it to the priest after the Mass was over and everything. But the reaction of the priest, and again, and I'm not judging, but because the Mass was beautiful. I mean, everything was fine. But he just took it and like, oh, okay. And that kind of just threw me off. And the point here is, and again, it's not a judgment call, but it's just a call of attention, that I think the consequences of receiving communion in the hand and just assuming that the communicant is going to consume it leads to, you know, situations like what just happened. You know what I'm saying? I think, and if you can get a comment from you and explain, that's my opinion. I mean, again, just, you know, the benefit of the doubt, because there are people who go to the churches and, you know, try to take advantage and, you know, take it and do sacrilegious and profane mm-hmm. the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. And again, in this case, it was just, wow, I can't.
Yeah. These are all examples of why, number one, I think communion in the hand is not a good idea at all. It's a right. pastoral decision the church has made. And I think, as in the case yes. of some other pastoral decisions, the church will look back later and regret it. I think it's also, I don't know to what extent this was because of the so-called COVID. I don't mean that COVID is so-called, but, you know, the so-called precautions against COVID. Right. It's absolutely unnecessary to force people to receive communion in the hand just because of COVID. It's just, it's an exaggerated precaution. And it's unnecessary, but yet there are some places where it's still mandated. I don't know why. So yeah, best I can tell you.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, no. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah, and to your point, as far as, like you said, give benefit of the doubt. The mass that I attended was early, and the people that were attending were elderly. And I hear the music in the background, but I think that's what it was. It was because of the protection of the COVID for the elderly. But could again, reception.
I got to run, George. I apologize, but. I'm so glad that you picked our Lord up and brought him back to the priest. That's very good of you to do that. Yes, thanks for the call. I'll be back with more right after this. Please stay right there.